back in on Canuck Central. We're in the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? We bring in our next guest. It is Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com, and he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. What's happening, Woodley?
I don't know. Is there anything going on in the goalie world today? I got new gear.
Oh my God, we can hear it.
We can see you too. Yeah, and that looks that's sharp.
That's nice. Put me in, coach. I probably should have put a little green on there. The way the Canucks are going through goalies, I might be up next.
How long do you work? How much work do you do to break your glove in? Like, when do you feel like your glove's ready to use? Do you go like right away, or do you have to like work it in for a few days?
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, Sad. I might as well have two blockers on out there, so it doesn't really matter. not exactly a great catcher of pucks, my friend. But I do find we get so much gear to test and work out with In Goal that for me, it's a really good excuse when you walk in with your teammates. Yeah. And like right away, you just, hey guys, testing new gear today. So, you know, if a couple go in, you know, it's not me, it's the gear. It's not broken in yet.
Yeah. That's always the excuse. You mean to tell me you're not doing the old Patrick Waugh, like around the world windmill glove save every now and again, Woodley?
I'm going to break in a few of these just for the office for you guys. I'm going to get a few Patty Waugh windmills. I do the Patrick Waugh like towards the end of the career where I do the windmill, think I've got it. It lies in my feet. And somebody caps it into there.
Exactly. We'll get to the goalies in a second, but I do want to dive into game two a little bit here and some of the tactical things that have been ongoing, and Nashville seemingly making an adjustment here in game two with their D zone coverage, and part of the reason they were able to block 33 shots, and also the Canucks not only getting 18 shots on net despite having 84 shot attempts. What did Andrew Brunette and the Preds change in the second game to really disrupt the Canucks offensive zone?
Well, to be honest, I'm not sure it's a total change. Yeah. We saw a little bit of it in game one. Me and Thomas Drance were talking about it up in the press box watching game one, noticing at times they were fronting a lot more in terms of rather than sitting back. The Canucks do such a good job of creating those layered screens. We've talked about it all year. It's a big part of their offense. Rather than engaging with those forwards and creating an even bigger screen or trying to push them out of the way and creating more chaos and traffic in front of UC Saros, there at times, and Ryan McDonough talked about this last night in the post game, it's all about a read as to when they're stepping out in front of those Canucks forwards. And because these point shots we've talked about all year, the ones through traffic and layered screens and tips and deflections that have been such a big part of their offense, because they're not typically off clappers or hard shots, you're not talking about breaking bones out there, right? Like wrist shots aren't going to sting the way. So it's they're doing it effectively. Early, I thought in game one, they were trying to create offense off of it. So like if you're out in front of the forwards and you do manage to knock down a puck, can you transition quickly and sort of negate that back pressure that Vancouver's been so good at? Obviously, there wasn't a lot of that last night because the Preds didn't create anything. But it has sort of changed the way those screens form. The lanes that are available, even to shooters like Quinn Hughes, who is so good at finding them. And I think, as we heard talk, you were sitting next to me, Reach, in the post game last night, talk about there are ways to get around it. And he thought those looks were there, and they just didn't execute. Now, I don't pretend, JT Miller talked about shooting for sticks and some of the different lateral options you can get to get around those higher sort of fronting defenders. But one of the plays I wondered about that they hit on and created a great chance on, and bear with me here, folks, because I'm about to suggest they missed the net on purpose. And there was plenty of missed nets last night when they weren't trying to. Mm. But, think of that save on Suter. Think of if they're coming out and you can't see the net and you shoot low off the end boards and create that scramble behind UC Saros. Hell of a save by UC Saros, by the way. He said he did not see where that puck had gone. His reaction was purely, and goalies will do this, they don't know where the puck is, they'll look at what the shooters are doing. Hmm. He saw Suter going towards that area to get a puck, and he just got that leg across and made a great save. But there's an opportunity. When talk about empty nets and opportunities, there's one they should have cashed on. All you got to do is elevate it over the 12 inches of UC Saros' pad. And I think chances like that, maybe not all, but some of the things that Talkett's talking about in terms of how do you get around that change in the way they're blocking shots and taking away lanes.
Yeah, and one of the things I kind of wonder about is, with that, can you start generating more low to high plays? I know that's hard, easier said than done, but is that something that they can maybe try to do a bit more of to generate some more looks?
Well, I mean, if you can work it quickly low to high, it makes it a little harder. You know, there's that read on the Predators end in terms of getting out and fronting. Yeah. Like if they're caught, if you're chasing behind the net, it's like my biggest pet peeve is when people say a goalie was too deep on a shot after a pass from below the goal line, like a quick bang, yeah, bang, pop pass, and they're, oh, the goalie's too deep. I'm like, the puck was below the goal, yeah, line. Where the hell do you want him to be? Like, you know, yeah, the puck's below the goal line, I'm going to be at the top of my crease. But like similarly, if a defenseman has to come down to the goal line to protect and you work it quickly back up top to create those lanes they've exploited all season, it's a lot harder for a defenseman to get out in front of those layers of traffic. So that's definitely one of them, Seth. But I think in listening to some of the commentary from the players post-game last night, the other one is to start working in attacking down low. That if they're going to come out to the top and come higher in the zone, you've got to be able to get it down low and attack from angles. And I think when you look at Saros as a smaller goaltender, we've talked about some of the exploitability in his game as a guy who's 5'10". You know, there's players on this team that should be able to hit that short side high when he's in a reverse. And if you watch him, if you're down even right on the goal line, if you can take a step out, he tucks into that reverse and gets his head against the post. And it's almost like he's so protective of short side high and that goal that has become the bugaboo for all reverse VH goalies, that he actually gives up far side low, just over the pad. And there's a couple of areas that I guarantee is in their scouting report there. So if you're able to sort of go high back to low, don't be afraid to tack up dead angles. You know, it's the playoffs. You're not going to get the middle of the slot very often. So, and if you attack up dead angles and there's loose pucks and rebounds, you've got to be willing to win the battles in front of the net to get to those opportunities.
Yeah, to me, it sounds, and I'm thinking about the JT Miller tip in the slot that ended up hitting the post. I think it got tipped a couple of times before it hit the post. But if you're the Canucks, you've got to attack from angles, because if the Predators are trying to get in front, then in theory you should, in front of you, then you should have body position closer down towards UC Saros.
Yeah, you know, so get underneath is exactly what you're talking about. So if the shot blocking and the fronting is going to come higher in the zone, you have to be willing to attack from underneath it if you can generate that. And you're right. Like, I think that one did hit a couple of hits. It eventually went off the foot of Alexander Carrier and off the post. And listen, like a couple near misses, right? And I know there's a lot of people that might say, like, hey, if you're relying on bounces and stuff to create your offense, like, this is the downside. You don't always get those bounces. But there were a couple of really close plays where they almost hit on it. So, seeing them work it down low, again, if the blocks are up higher and the defending's up higher in the zone, can you attack with pop passes? Can you get a guy in behind it? And as they did with Joshua late in that game, work your way into the middle and work low high without necessarily going back up to the top of the, top of the zone and up near the blue line. Just different ways to try and open up a Predators defending unit that has done a great job of taking care of the front of the slot and the net and all that area in front of little UC Saros.
Now, Saros made a couple of great saves. You mentioned the Suter one, of course, and then also the one he made on Brock Besser. It was right in the slot and makes the blocker save on it. He had a couple of really good saves. He also left some net wide open. Now, obviously, East-West passes the back door one, the Pettersson one, he misses the net. How do you think he's looking in net, UC Saros?
Yeah, I mean, he's, Saros has the ability to make, I mean, the save on Joshua late, yeah, right? The aggressiveness to get that pad out there. I know the rebound ends up going off the post and he gets tied up, but even his recovery after after Joshua can't bang that thing off mm-hmm. the post as he's tied up, like Saros still gets a pad over there to make it hard. He's really quick. He's really good down low. I think they've done a really good job. You know, the Pettersson one is a wide open net, not just because of the pass guys, but because of the amount of traffic that UC's trying to see through. Like, he doesn't see that pass, right? And so I think they've done a really good job. He is, like, and this is, we think of the hits and we think of the shot blocking and the cumulative toll that can take over a series on a player. Mm-hmm. Don't discount how bloody hard he has to work right now. And even in game two with all those shot attempts to find pucks, how active he is in doing that. He's not a guy who can look over screens and just sort of sit and wait for it to come. He has to really watch it. Good, watch it. If you have a chance, and it's tough because we never get the ISO on the goalie when the play moves up higher in the zone and there's all that traffic. Watch how hard he works to find pucks. And if we get into game 6 and game 7, we talk about fatigue. This is a goalie that played more than anyone else. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that might start to be a factor in this series because, you know, not that he looked gassed or anything last night talking to him, but man, he had to work so bloody hard to find that puck. And we saw the times when he didn't and they just were unfortunate with near misses or posts. You know, that's something that I don't think people talk about is having a cumulative effect as the series goes on. And I believe it can.
I know the game story coming out of game two is more like, okay, how did the Canucks get more shots on to UC Saros? But it seems as though they have been targeting the blocker side. And I know it's been a part of the storylines coming out of these first two games. We see it again with the Zadorov goal last night. Is the blocker side a thing for UC Saros?
I mean, like, listen, every goalie has relative strengths and weaknesses. Relative to a really good glove hand for UC Saros, absolutely it is. The Zadorov one tips, right?
Yeah.
Like that hit, I think Jankowski in the high slot hit his stick and deflected. But for sure, we saw in game one, and I guess I haven't been on with you guys since game one, there was no question in my mind when you see the Lindholm goal and then also when you see Pettersson from the right dot on an open look on the power play try and shoot off his right hip. Underneath that blocker side arm, he's given up 11 goals in the regular season. I don't know if that's highest in the league. I didn't run a comparison, but I guarantee you there aren't many that have given up more there. Save percentage off the right hip underneath the blocker side arm is .656. So when I see that on my numbers and I know that that's in their pre-scout, then absolutely. Why wouldn't you? Like, if a goalie has that number on the blocker side and a lower number high blocker than he does high glove, you know, outside of maybe certain situations where, you know, you've got an open look and you're a left-handed shot coming off a certain spot where you're always going to want to pull it and go glove, obviously you're going to try and target a relative weakness. I'm not saying that UC Saros has a bad blocker, but the way he holds it sort of out and away from his body and has a tendency at times to get a little punchy would be an overstatement with it, but he kind of, you can get a little stabby with it and that opens up, you know, space. Mm-hmm. They try to protect high for UC Saros, and that can open up space underneath. So not surprised to see it. Would be shocked if they didn't keep going to it because you can create doubts, right? Like
right.
You pick a few high blocker, the blocker gets more active. You start to leak a few, you know, under the elbow. What do? You might start to sort of default down into more of a blocking save earlier, and now that opens up high blocker. So, you know, we'll see if they do. I'd be surprised if they don't, though.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see because you're right. There's so many opportunities there for Vancouver. Can they keep that pressure going in Game 3? Now, on the other side of it, the Canucks net minding, Casey DeSmith got his second start in a playoff game, first as a Canuck in the playoffs. And he was criticized for all three goals to some degree by fans, at least. And some people, they mentioned the first one, maybe too aggressive going post to post. The second one, Forsberg. I know you mentioned, you know, the post play being sticking close to the post is something teams try to utilize. And Forsberg goes high near a post. The third one, I mean, the rebound, is it a bad rebound or not? Is Pettersson who knocks it in? What did you see on all three of those goals? Is it fair to criticize him? And where did you see, what did you think about his game last night?
I'm a little less critical just by default. Of course, right. I've got a goalie union card to protect. I don't want to hear that, you know, knock at the door,
right.
Somebody taking it away. Cause then they'll take away all this cool gear I get. So first one, the deflection's high enough in the zone that you'd want to be a little more patient on it. I'm sure he'd say the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's a minute 14 into your first playoff start. The crowd's chanting your name. That little bit of perhaps just a hair early, a hair aggressive with that push to his left. Like, that's human nature, right? Like, that's, it's funny. I was talking with Alex Auld on his way down in the elevator, and we both kind of said, like, of course that's going to happen, like, in that moment. But what cost him was actually, if you watch the replay, and he talked about this in his post-game interview, He slips out his left edge. He loses an edge and he can't push back across. I don't know if it was the ice or the edge. Casey almost never loses that edge. He is so good moving on his knees. It's one of the strengths of his game. Sometimes when we've talked about it, he can slide himself out of position. And so as much as people will look at the initial slide, putting himself out of the net, it's the fact he missed the pushback that prevented him from making that save. And that is not a push he misses very often. So just feels like a lot of things just conspired against him on that one. Tough way to start, obviously. The Forsberg one, both defenders sort of shrink off of Forsberg to take away the back door. So would you like to maybe protect short side a little more rather than getting pulled off or cheating off at all yourself? Yeah, maybe. but I don't know. It's Philip Forsberg getting allowed to walk out
like
of the corner.
He's 4 feet away from you. Yeah,
I think Casey's almost the last one I blame on that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a handful, right? Yeah. Heard of him, good player. and, you know, the last one, you know, we talk about good player. Like, because the narrative out of the national room, a lot of talk about Anthony Bevilier as a playoff performer. Like, I know we didn't see much here, but there is a history there with the Islanders. He has 1+1 last night. Demko robbed him in the first game of a sure goal, or what looked like a sure goal. But that's a good high shot that creates a rebound. And a couple times they were up high and the puck ends up sitting at the feet. Like, listen, you're just trying to make the first save. Would you like to do a better job controlling the rebound? Sure. But maybe don't give up a rush chance that allows Bevilier to walk into the dot. He made some really good saves. Forsberg at one point got to walk in off the left side unchecked below the dot. And Casey, you know, stayed patient and upright and made a tough high save on that one. I know the rebound, again, ends up down in his feet. You're just looking for first saves on good looks and hoping you can keep the rebound in front of you. He did on the Forsberg one. He didn't on the Bevilier one that Sissons ultimately gets credited for the 3-0 goal. I find it, it's one of those, when you're asking, am I critical of them? It's Mitch Korn always used to say like could-haves and should-haves. Mm-hmm. And I don't think definitely not the second one. I'm not on him at all. You know, the third one could have, but not a should have.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah. And I think people that are being overly critical of Casey DeSmith today, I don't know. It's not the game story for me.
No. And Rick Tocchet had just met with the media in Nashville and said, DeSmith's starting game three. So there's no concern about it, whether he's going to start the game or not. Like he's going to be the guy for game three.
Well, it was
not a collapse.
Yeah. The game wasn't on DeSmith as we just talked about. And like to put Artur Shilov's in that spot, I mean, it's got to be a desperation card for the Canucks, I would imagine, to go to Shilov's in that kind of a spot.
Yeah, like you're down 3-1 in case he has a meltdown. Like, that's what it's going to take, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe this is a different conversation if not for Edmonton, right? Like, that was a really strong bounce-back performance against Edmonton for Casey DeSmith. So maybe the conversation is different if that's the case. But, you know, the way Casey played that game, you know, again, there were some tough saves last night too. And that's a tough night. We've talked about this, man. It's hard when your team's at the other end peppering the other guy and then the odd man rush here and there that you give up and you've been sitting there for 5 minutes watching the other guy make saves or watching your team pound the other end and get no results. Like those are tough mental moments. And I think the experience of DeSmith probably has value here. I think if you get into perhaps a desperation situation after a really tough loss, maybe you go to Archer's in a more of a, you know, Hail Mary type thing. But, you know, at this point, I would be shocked if it's anyone but DeSmith for 3 and 4.
Well, the other big question is surrounding Thatcher Demko. And it's kind of, you know, the elephant in the room, too, in terms of goaltending here for this team. And it's not promising even the coaches. We went 20 minutes without mentioning
Demko. I'm just checking Demko. Did we just go 20 minutes without you guys asking me
almost
for a Thatcher Demko?
17
okay
minutes. We waited to the end. I mean, I think we all know what's going on at this point, right? Like, you know, you've been on a bunch of shows as well, right? And I know it's been reported. Ellie Friedman was on with Dan and Jamie yesterday on Canucks Talk and mentioned it as well and was more reporting during the game and talking to himself last night saying he went from day to day in the morning to week to week post game, right? So that kind of tells you where it's at. And essentially
whatever they found out yesterday was
not great. And that's something Dreger mentioned too, right? And even talking to himself when somebody asked him, so he's not playing in the first round, he agreed and said yes last night. So we know he's not playing in the first round, and it seems increasingly unlikely he's even going to be ready in the second round based on stuff that's kind of out there. So the outlook doesn't look overly promising, does it, on Thatcher Demko in the medium to short term?
No, I mean, like, it was week to week the last time.
Yeah.
Right? And that was 4-5. So I just think, and it's the same knee. And I do believe in the reporting that it's a different issue with the same knee, but at some point there's an integrity issue in the joint that you have to allow time to heal. I don't have specifics on exactly what the injury is other than just to sort of confirm what others have reported, others with a lot better connections to me than me, about it being different but in the same knee. We saw the play, and that's what hurts the most, like that it was such an innocuous post entry. Like I watch him all day in practice go into that without a problem, and that it came after the empty net goal, so it was meaningless. Like it just felt like the ultimate like rip your heart out Canucks moment, 4-2, celebrate everything, and oh, by the way, 48 seconds left, nothing. Anyways, that's tough, and knowing what he went through to get back is really tough. But the fact it's the same knee, the fact it's week to week, like it just, you know, I'm not expecting to see Thatcher Demko this round or the next round. That's just the reality. Like, knees take time to heal. And man, I've seen a lot of crap on the internet. You guys may have heard it can be a bad place. But a lot of like sort of replies to other stuff I've done, you know, about him and his health and, you know, the ability to play through it. Like, understand this probably happened because he came back. I'm not saying directly related, but like, you come back from one injury to make sure you're ready and put in all that work to make sure you're ready for the playoffs, but you're ahead of schedule. They said it, right? Like, ahead of what the schedule for that injury would normally be. And, you know, you're taking a risk. You're taking a risk with your body. And ultimately, you know, it didn't work out for them. But like, what's the preference, folks? That he wasn't ready for the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yeah.
And you, like, you sort of can't have it both ways, right? Like, you can't say he's injury prone now when this injury was probably related to the first injury, even if it's not the same one, and the comeback process, but also then, like, say he, you know, like, you wanted him back. Like, they're, you know, those two things, quite often we say two, I know, Sat, you like this one. Both things can be true.
Yes.
Well, in this case, perhaps not.
Yeah. No, well, that's true.
And good luck keeping Demko out of a playoff game if he feels like he's ready to go and has been cleared to play, right? Like,
well, and that's the other thing too. Like, anything about timelines and everything, like, I don't expect to see him just based on, because it's the same knee and we're talking about week to week, and like, it's a knee and you're a goaltender. Like, it's kind of an important one, right?
Well, and then when, if you have two injuries, integrity issue, Demko, you can lead to a bad injury. Yeah.
Well, and the fact that it happened on such an innocuous play, you know, makes you wonder, you know, how much was everything,
yeah,
you know, the integrity of the joint, so to speak. Not that I'm a doctor, I just play one on the radio. But if anyone's going to do this, it will be this guy. And the competitive nature, the passion he has for the position, how much he wants to be there for his team in this moment in the playoffs that led him to get back. Like, I just wish all the people that are crapping all over the injury, saying things like, oh, you know, should be back faster, or is injured too often and all that. Like, I wish they could get a glimpse into how much work goes into what he did to get back,
yeah,
into how competitive this guy is and how much he wants to be there for his team. Like, for me, it was heartbreaking almost to see the injury and sort of like, just not about the Canucks. I'm an independent reporter. We don't cheer for teams, but just like knowing the person and knowing, yeah, what he went through, and then to see some of the crap online. Like, I don't normally get on the soapbox here, guys, but like, it's really bugged me. And the injury prone stuff, frankly, bugs me a little bit too, because these aren't two separate things. Like, you can't be like, oh, he got injured again. No, he was still, just like last year. He misses all that time with a groin injury. It's directly related to the injury he had the year before. Like, this isn't, you know, new injuries. And so, you know, I'm not ready to go there, frankly. I know a lot of people are, and a lot of people are critical of it. I'm just not. So this is me pushing back.
I wish we had more time, as always. Woodley, thanks for this.
Are there other series going on with other goaltenders? I have to sort of pull my head out of my Canucks bubble and take a look.
Maybe next week. Maybe next week.
Maybe we can break down Connor Hellebuyck having a not so great start to these playoffs.
Yeah,
at some point. At some point.
Another playoffs.
Yes.
Yes. That's a good point. Yes. Good point. Very much. Thanks, Woodley.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Kevin Woodley on Sports at 650, brought to you by White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or at whiterockhyundai.com. Canucks playoff coverage on Sports at 650, brought to you by Merit Kitchens, Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. You are listening to Canuck Central.
Hey, it's Vic Nizar. Have your say and join me on The People's Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on Canuck Central. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Canucks playoff coverage on Sports at 650 is brought to you by Merit Kitchens, Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at meritkitchens.com. your tailored kitchen awaits. Lots still to get into here on Canuck Central, including a quick goal horn. Just one game in the Stanley Cup playoffs currently on the go. It is the Toronto Maple Leafs taking a 1-0 lead on the Boston Bruins. Matthew Nye is the goal scorer after a great play and pass from Mitch Marner. Joel Edmondson getting the secondary assist as Mitch Marner under fire and delivers in the moment for the Maple Leafs to give them this 1-0 lead. Again, no William Nylander for the Leafs in this game. Two series tied up at one apiece. Still to come a little bit later on, the Vegas Golden Knights going for a 2-0 series lead on the Dallas Stars, and the Oilers hosting the Kings for game two. That one on Sportsnet tonight at 7 o'clock. All right, so I just tweeted it out. We do have a giveaway for today's show.
We do.
We're giving away two tickets to the viewing party at Rogers Arena for game three between the Canucks and Preds. This also includes a VIP skate, which is taking place at the arena from 11 a.m. to 12 o'clock noon that day. Listeners can go to the skate and come back later for the viewing party. And these seats are in a special Rogers section and will include snacks and pop. So it's a pretty big prize. You want the ultimate watch party viewing experience for Game 3 Canucks in Nashville on Friday night. It's a 4:30 puck drop for that one. Well, we're giving you an opportunity right now. 604-280-0650, 1-888-275-0650. We'll take caller number 3 for this special giveaway.
Should have done 40 to inspire Pedersen.
You should have done 40? If Josh had two hands, I might have done 40.
Yeah, this is a call. We already said caller 3 anyways.
I've do 40. Dom is handling.
Oh, Dom is handling?
All right. Let's do caller 40 then.
Change of plans. Caller number 40. Get those fingers dialing. 604-280-0650, 1-888-275-0650. Caller number 40.
I loved caller 40 because it makes these guys work. It makes them drop calls, open the lines, drop calls, go to the next one. You know, they got to put real work in to find the call.
Yeah, they got to sacrifice more than the Nashville Predators sacrifice to block all those shots.
A lot of calls
night.
Are being dropped right now.
Yes. Calling back again.
By the way, the goal horn brought to you by Rewind Beer Co. Find their big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. It is Canucks Central. So, yes, caller number 40, you'll get in for the watch party at Rogers Arena. And that's just for game three. Plus, you get a VIP skate going as well from 11 a.m. to noon at Rogers Arena. Could be a nice little prize for you. And your next opportunity to win will be with Halford and Bruff and Canucks Talk tomorrow. So you'll have two more opportunities to win tomorrow. If you're not caller number 40 today, then callers tomorrow and listeners tomorrow will have another opportunity with Halford and Bruff between 6 a.m. to 9, and of course with Canucks Talk between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. So the Canucks have arrived in Nashville.
Yes.
And they're getting ready for game three. Today was a travel day. They didn't practice. I'm certain that they will practice tomorrow because it's been a while
since
they practiced.
Well, yeah, because they had optional. The last one was an optional. So.
They had an optional on Monday and then an optional again yesterday before the game. So I'm sure there'll be a practice involved for tomorrow's game. Don't know, obviously, about any lineup decisions or even Tyler Myers. But let's hear from the coach. Rick Tocchet, just speaking to media in Nashville. Here's what he had to say as the Canucks arrive to Smashville for Game 3.
Coach, what excites you about the opportunity to make some adjustments here? I know you like practice time and then get going here on the road.
Yeah, we're a couple of days early. Good practice. Guys get to go get a team dinner together. It's a lot of fun playing on the road playoffs. You know, as much as our building was outstanding, you're going to have another building that's great. So, it just gets guys juiced up. You know, our team loves playing on the road, and you got to play road hockey if you want to go far in the playoffs.
I know you guys have taken a look at the tape. Is there anything else that you've seen in terms of adjustments since we spoke with you last night?
Well, I think we got to give Nash a lot of credit. They had a lot of resolve. They played really well defensively. They blocked a lot of shots. They did a lot of good things. Yeah, there's a few tweaks that we can do, but, you know, I don't think there's a major game plan change, to be honest with you. I just think it's just you stick with what you know what got us here. But there is some tweaks I'd like to see us do differently, and we'll work on that in practice tomorrow.
Obviously, the result didn't go the way you wanted, but yeah. You could say that you dominated a lot of parts of the game. Are there a lot of positives to take away from that game?
Yeah, of course. I mean, just like game one, you know, there's positives that Nashville did. So I think you look at it both ways. You know, every game has its life of its own in the playoffs. So you move on from it. You learn from it and both sides. And then you make a few adjustments. You know, you do some work individually with certain players. And then you get ready for game three.
Do you feel like it's significant that you no longer have the home ice advantage after splitting at home?
No, not concerned at all. I think it's important that, you know, we're a good road team. I think we're very confident going on the road. We know how to travel well. You know, it's a long flight, but you know, we're used to this. So there's a lot of things that we're used to. So, you know, just keep things normal around here and be ready for game three.
And it's the plan for game three to start Casey again?
Yes, Casey will start.
In your experience in the playoffs, what's the key to getting to your game early on the road, and what's going to be a challenging environment?
Well, you know, that first 5 minutes, especially in this building, it's crazy, and I think you got to use it to your advantage. You know, I think if you look at the coach's handbook, everybody says simplify. You know, I think advancing the puck, playing a simple game early is a smart way. You know, get a good hit in, good shot maybe. And I think if nothing happens exciting on your shift, it's okay. Like, you don't have to press the issue at the start. And stay disciplined. Sometimes when the crowd's loud and, you know, you tend to get a little overjuiced and take penalties. So I think being disciplined is a big key, too.
You guys have been really physical through two games. Have you been happy with how they've kind of embraced that playoff gritty style of hockey?
Yeah, I think both teams. I think for us, it's important that you embrace that pain. It's going to hurt. And I think when you leave the games, when it does hurt, you feel good about yourself.
Coach, it was a bit of a whirlwind leading up to this moment. Mm-hmm. Have you been able to just take a breath now that you've had a day to just enjoy the fact that you've gotten here and that these guys have really put in the work to be at this point?
Yeah, I think today, traveling on the plane, talking, you know, laughing, joking around, talking to other people, we've kind of breathed here the last couple of days. Today, just kind of dissected those two games, how electric that building was. We were talking about it again today. And just like, for me, guys that haven't experienced it or guys that first playoff or not experienced, you're happy for them. So they get to taste this stuff. And I think it'll settle some guys down now, knowing it's game three. They've seen the first two games, what it is. Now, can you raise your level? That's another thing. So can we raise our level?
Rick, you just said yourself that the atmosphere at Rogers Arena was electric in games one and two. Now you face the opposite scenario. We're coming as a road team to another loud building. What's your advice to all the players in that situation?
Love it. You know, I love getting booed and whatever. They don't throw, the Nationals got great fans. They don't throw stuff at you. But I do love the fact that sometimes it's nice to be the villain. And somebody booing you, I think it brings out the best in certain guys. So use it to your advantage.
There is head coach Rick Tocchet speaking to media in Nashville, and a lot of media is still traveling, so it was a small congregation around Rick Tocchet for that, and didn't have a ton of questions to answer, and not a lot developed in less than 24 hours from the game to loss, but Casey DeSmith getting the net for game three, that is confirmed. I don't think there was really ever any doubt in my mind. And as we talked about with Woodley in the last hour, you can go back and listen to it on the podcast. You'd have to be in a pretty desperate spot to go to Artur Shilovs if you're the Canucks.
Yeah, it's like we talked about before. My view hasn't changed on it really. To me, he becomes an option in game four if game three doesn't go your way.
Yeah.
Let's say DeSmith has the same performance and the Canucks lose. Might be a decision to make. Not to say he was horrible and Woodley defended his play too or whatever it is, but you go down 2-1 and if he doesn't inspire a ton of confidence, for instance, do you consider it then? Or is it, you know, Woodley said you have to be down 3-1. I think being down 2-1 and if his game is average, you may have to consider it for game four. But I don't think we're there. Like I mentioned, like DeSmith gets game two and game three for sure. Beyond that, That's going to be the question mark.
The other mention from Rick Tocchet there, we're going to make some tweaks. We're not going to change anything from what we've done that's got us here. But yeah, there will be some tweaks for game three. Now, what exactly those things are, he sort of touched on it last night. We talked about it with Woodley. Is there some things that they can do to counteract how Nashville is defending the Canucks and the fronting they've been doing in the defensive zone? Some of those things, do they have to take shots from different angles? How do they open up those angles? Like, there's the run of play hasn't been the issue. They've mostly nullified Nashville's rush and transition offense, but how does Vancouver go from being able to carry most of the offensive zone possession time in these first two games to translating that into more shots on net and more scoring chances? Mm-hmm. That to me is the key for Vancouver moving forward.
Yeah, and like Woodley mentioned too, there are, like, if they continue doing what they did and execute slightly better, you should mm-hmm. get more opportunities. But there are other ways to broach it as well, right? Other ways for you to try to generate. And Tocchet said they're going to make some tweaks. He says we're not going to change a lot, but yeah, there's certainly tweaks we're going to be making here ahead of game three.
Yeah, and I think it's where they're taking shots from, obviously. Do you have the forced or the on purpose miss net once in a while to try and get that rebound off the end boards? And we'll see how Nashville changes too. Don't expect Nashville to shell up in the way that they did in the third period last night.
No, I don't think so.
That hasn't been their identity all season long. It just felt like they went into desperation mode with the lead that they had.
And I think it depends on the score too.
Yeah,
a little bit, but I think they're a team that has been very aggressive this year, taking chances, and they did not do that at all. And the coach also mentioned, he said he liked their commitment to pain because they blocked a lot of shots, but that it's not a sustainable way of playing.
Yeah,
being in your own end for a full 20 minutes and absorbing the amount of pressure the Canucks put on them.
Both Rick Tocchet and Andrew Brunet, Rick Tocchet's motto, embrace the pain. And Andrew Brunette, commitment to pain.
Yeah, 100%.
They just love the pain.
They do. But, I mean, doesn't Tocchet seem like a guy who's relishing being in the playoffs right
yes.
now?
He loves it.
And he's like, he's so excited about the challenge of being on the road. It seems like he's happy, to get on the road with the guys for a couple of days and having today to travel. He said he spoke with the guys on the plane, kept it loose or whatever, and really, enjoyed the fact that they're here in the playoffs and traveling to Nashville. So you have a day, you get there tonight and they're there now, have a dinner, hang out with the guys, have fun, enjoy yourself a little bit, but obviously not party too hard, and then have a good practice tomorrow. And is that the kind of reset you need here to maybe just calm down a little bit as well? Because as much as, game one, they're overly hyped. Game two, they were also pressing a little bit, gripping their sticks a little bit. They all kind of need to relax somewhat. And does going on the road allow them to be more at ease here as they get more, comfortable in this playoff series?
Got to get out of your head in the playoffs, as maybe we saw a little bit from the Canucks last night. Canucks playoff coverage on Sports at 650, brought to you by Merritt Kitchens, Canadian-made beauty, strength, and craftsmanship. Find an authorized kitchen designer near you today at MerrittKitchens.com. Your tailored kitchen awaits. All right, let's get to the goal horn. The goal horn is brought to you by Rewind Beer Co. Find their Big West Coast IPA at a liquor store near you and celebrate big plays in a big way. The Boston Bruins have tied things up with the Maple Leafs. They're now at the end of two periods. Trent Frederick scoring his second of the series, and by all estimations, from the goal that I saw, pretty tough goal for Ilya Samsonov to be letting in. Don't want to get beat short side like that is what I would say.
Yeah, not great. he there was another shot. It was off the face off.
Yeah.
They shot it in from it was the neutral zone. He wasn't expecting it. Like, hit him in the chest and he was like, "What happened?" I was like, "What is going on, man? Are you paying attention?"
And Brad Marchand continues to be getting under the Maple Leafs' skin, it seems. Before the Trent Frederick goal, there was a battle going on throughout, from the Leaf zone into the neutral zone between Tyler Bertuzzi and Brad Marchand. So Marshawn may not be as good a player as he was a couple of years ago, Sat, but he is still the best in the league at getting under the skin of opponents.
He really is.
He has mastered it.
No, he really has. And I mean, the thing about him too is his skill level so high.
Yes.
That it's not just like a pest you can ignore. Be like, hey, you're like a fourth liner, you're a plugger, you're a nobody. Like he's going to get under your skin, then he's going to score on you too. He's going to set up goals. And I think that's what makes it so incredibly frustrating that so often he's also one of the best players on the ice.
Yeah. It's it's pretty incredible. What Brad Marchand has been able to do. A couple of texts. James and QB. Can you guys explain fronting the puck? New term, need to understand. So we went through this a little bit with Woodley, who's really good at explaining these types of things. But essentially, the Canucks and Predators, right, for this series. If you go back and watch... in game two, especially when the Canucks are set up in the offensive zone, Nashville is getting in front of the Canucks players at the net front or even in the high slot. So instead of giving them position or trying to get behind them to avoid them getting deep in the zone, Nashville defenders are getting in front of the Canucks to avoid them being able to get a stick on a puck, try to stop the tip, try to, nullify their screen a little bit more, those kinds of things, and using that to get in front of them and block the shot rather than have the Canucks be able to tip the puck for those types of chances, which have been kind of the bread and butter of the Canucks offense this year.
Yeah, it's kind of like in basketball where you close out a little bit, and it's kind of like that you close out on the player. You're not so much concerned with the guy standing idly in position. You're more concerned about attacking the guy who has the puck to, like Reach mentioned, make it harder for them to get shots through, but also, to your point, getting in front of guys so they can't get their sticks in front and tip. And I think one of the things that the Canucks did decently well in the first game and didn't really pay off for them was they had that tip from Suter on the Hughes shot.
Yeah,
it's kind of what they're looking to do. If you front a guy, it's harder for Suter to get that stick on it, right? Because guy gets in front of him.
He's not going
to
see the shot from the point as well.
Exactly. So that's what they're trying to, especially with the Canucks being one of the better tip teams in the league, and that's something they really look out to do. So that's something they're trying to do to nullify, which means you have to get behind that layer of fronting, and it's not as simple as shooting it through those guys. Some seams open up, but it's, can you get low and high too, and can you get
get underneath?
Yeah, and like Woodley mentioned, that Suter chance where the puck goes off the wall and then he gets the rebound, a bit of a set play, because that's one way to get behind the defense is throw it off the board, the puck comes out, and then those guys are now behind the defenders and have a cleaner look on the goaltender.
One thing we did want to this text came in earlier, we were pretty much out of time, but Tyler Myers' impact on the series, overrated or underrated?
He was good in game one and wasn't there in game two, and they lost. So the correlation is there.
Underrated, one might say. We'll see how he's feeling, and hopefully the Canucks can get through Myers' sickness and maybe a little bit of what's been going through the room without further, further injury, further sickness going through players on the roster. It's Dan Riccio, Sat Tyarshaw, four producers, Ben and Josh, my co-host Sat. I'm Dan. We'll be back tomorrow, 4 o'clock, same time, same place. Canuck Central on Sportsnet 650.